Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we are answering your listener questions.
Joel, it is Listener Question Monday, and we've got five excellent questions, including one about asking for a credit limit increase, how that affects your credit score. On another one, we're going to talk about the things to consider when you're on the path to home ownership. And we have a question as well that has to do with bikes. We're going to make a bike recommendation to somebody because he knows our love, our passion of all sorts of bikes out there. So excited to get to that last question as well.
Yeah, we don't want him to spend too much, but you know what? A bike is one thing that's worth spending a little bit more on, I think.
And right? I would be willing to say that a bike is an investment as well. There's not many things that we spend money on that go down in value that I would consider an investment, but bikes totally are. Because think about all the money that it's saving you by not driving around.
That's right? True. It's a good point. Yeah, bikes are definitely a worthwhile purchase. I don't know if I'm willing to call a bike an investment, but I think it's a worthwhile purchase because it can save you a lot of money.
A worthwhile purchase for sure. Yeah.
All right. Okay. Question for you. Frugal or cheap? Let's do this. We haven't done it in a minute.
Oh, let's do it.
So recently I heard about this company. I think they're an Instagram ad called Propane Taxi. And
wait, how do you say propane? You say propane?
Propane. Propane.
It's propane.
Propane. All right.
The emphasis is on the first syllable.
The wrong syllable. So I saw this ad. I decided, wow, $10 propane tank delivered to my porch. Why not? I'll give it a shot. And so I signed up and they delivered it when they said they were going to. And literally it was $8.50 because
nice.
I chose a date like 2 weeks off in the future, which saved me even more money. And
well, it's like Amazon slow ship. We'll give you $5 of random credit that you'll never be able to find.
Exactly. And so, yeah, the propane tank showed up and man, it was super seamless.
Nice.
But you know, my initial thought when I first placed the order, when I first ordered that tank was, I'm never going to use these guys again because I saw their regular rates that were like $23 to $25 a tank. And I know I can go just down to the local hardware store and I can get the same tank for $14. But yeah, what's your take on that? Is it frugal or cheap to sign up for a service because of the initial deal, knowing in all likelihood you're never going to use that service again?
Man, this is such a tough question. And I constantly struggle with questions like this as well, because in an instance like this, here's why I struggle, is because I feel pretty confident in my ability to say no. Like, I'm pretty sure I'm never going to use a company like that again. It's funny that you mentioned them because I'm looking at swapping out one of my tanks with them as well. I think I got the same Instagram ad that you did. Because now that it's summer, we're doing a lot more grilling, you know? But obviously, the company is banking on the fact that you'll use them. You will realize how great they are, you know, the convenience that they're able to provide, that you won't have to lug your, you know, the heavy, nasty propane tank around. You know, it's got like grease drippings on it. To completely avoid that, they'll think that you'll kind of fall in love with their service and that you'll just kind of stick with it. But I struggle with it knowing that I'm going to cancel it, right? If I sign up for that service, I'm pretty sure I'm going to cancel. I'm pretty confident in my ability to say no, and that's not going to be something that I just kind of slowly, you know, upgrade my quality of life by, you know, taking part in this delivery service. But even still, that being said, they're taking that into account. They know that there are going to be some people who try their service.
Like you.
Exactly. Who are going to take advantage of that discounted first propane tank, and then they're going to walk away. And so I think they know that, right? And so it's built into their business model. And so therefore, I label it frugal.
Yeah.
I think it's a wise use of money.
I think I'm with you on this because I think their goal, their effort is to try to provide a great service and show you how wonderful it can be. And you know what? I'm leaving room in the back of my mind that I could be persuaded that I'm just going to start having propane tanks delivered to my porch. But in all likelihood, that's not going to happen. I'm not willing to pay $10 extra every time I need a refill. But I was willing to give it a shot, knowing full well there was a really good chance I never use them again. So I'm going to go frugal, even though maybe some of our audience would say it's cheap. But I think it's worth it to take advantage of an initial offer. And Matt, it's happened to me before where I took advantage of an initial offer and I didn't think I was going to be a sticky customer. And then I ended up being one. For instance, one time when I switched banks and there was, you know, an initial bonus to sign up and transfer your money over. And I was like, cool. Yeah, I'm totally going to ditch and go back to my bank after I get that free money. And I didn't. I ended up liking what that bank had to offer. And
there
it felt worthwhile. It kept them around in my life. So yeah, I'm going to say frugal. When you take advantage of one of those offers that is readily available, it's frugal. It's not cheap.
And plus, we're talking about Propane Taxi a lot right now. And we have no affiliation with them at all. But it's something you and I just felt like discussing. I'm willing to bet that they think that this is probably a huge win and that we're actually losing out. So, all right, man, let's go ahead and take it to the beer. This episode, we are drinking a beer by Wild Leap. This one is called Time, Love, and Tenderness, and this is a double IPA. I'm looking forward to sharing this one with you, buddy, and we will give our tasting notes, what we think about this beer, at the end of the episode.
You know it. All right, Matt, on to the listener questions that we're going to answer on today's episode. For folks that have a question that they want to submit for the show, Matt and I would love to take your question on a future episode. Just go to our website, howtomoney.com/ask. You'll find the simple directions there for how to submit a voice question so we can feature it on the show and then answer it. So, Matt, let's get to the first one. This one's about asking for a credit limit increase.
Hi, this is Lisa from Baton Rouge. I recently paid off two credit cards, and a friend advised that I ask for a credit limit increase on either or both of them because she said it would increase my credit score. Now, I was planning on leaving the accounts open, not using them, and letting the account closing process happen naturally, so to speak. So I'm wondering if what she said is accurate and if y'all had any advice on that. Thank you.
Lisa, thanks so much for that question and congrats on paying off your credit card debt. That is awesome. Paying off consumer debt, especially spread out over a couple of cards like that, that is no easy feat, you know, especially during this recession as well. So good job there.
Takes a lot of dedication to make that happen.
Absolutely. So Lisa, credit limit increases. They are traditionally a great thing to ask of your credit card company. They can lift your credit score nicely because so much of your score is a reflection of how much of your available credit you are actually using. So as a reminder, you don't want to be using much of your available credit, but you do want a lot of it available to you.
Yeah, it's such an odd system, Matt, that it's set up that way, where you look better the more credit you have access to, but you're not using much of it. It's very confusing to a lot of people.
Yeah, it's sort of like if you have a Ferrari, but the credit bureaus only want to see you take that up to like 20 miles per hour. But that being said, Lisa, you are unlikely to get a limit increase in today's environment. Credit card companies are actually slashing limits because they're worried about people relying too much on their credit cards right now. So traditionally, this is great advice, but it's actually unlikely to work for you right now.
Yeah, you probably don't want to call your credit card company asking for a credit limit increase just because they're likely to say no. So probably best to avoid that conversation for the time being. And Lisa, you are right to leave those cards open, but we would prefer that you actually use them on occasion, right? Maybe 2 to 4 times a year, maybe once a month on a recurring monthly subscription, something like that, because you actually don't want those cards to close. And if you leave them open, but then stop using them altogether, eventually that credit card company is going to close it for you. And that's not what you want. Using that credit card in a limited fashion and then having it paid automatically every single month is going to keep that credit score alive in your credit mix. And it's going to help out your credit score over time. And the great thing is then you don't even really have to think about it. That card is helping your score in a big way just by using it sparingly and then paying off the balance in full every month.
Yeah, and there are a couple instances, though, when we would recommend closing a credit card. Lisa, one is, you know, if you're likely to run up more credit card debt by using those cards because that credit is available, right? If that's the case, if that's you, then go ahead and close those cards. Now, this is an instance where knowing yourself and being honest with yourself is really important. Honestly, Joel, this kind of makes me think of, like, if someone has, you know, say a drinking problem, right? And they are quitting alcohol, it's probably not a good idea just to keep alcohol just around the house, just in case. You're going to be more likely to lapse. And, you know, if someone knows that that's a temptation for them, well, that's just not a wise move. Having a drink now and then, it's a good thing. It's something that you and I enjoy. But if you know it's going to be a problem, just remove it from your life completely. I think credit cards are very similar. If you have a spending problem, well, it's not a good idea just to keep these cards with high credit limits available to you just sitting around. And then another instance where you'd want to close the cards is if it has an annual fee and you aren't taking advantage of those extra benefits. There are a lot of great cards out there that have no annual fee with great benefits, especially cash back. Joel, I know that you're a big fan of the Citi double cash card where you earn 2% on every single purchase.
Yeah, it keeps it simple. 2% on everything.
Yeah, I love that. And so we'll link to that card in our show notes. But there are a lot of cards like that one that have no annual fee every single year, and you can take advantage of some of those benefits without having to pay extra.
Yeah. All right, Matt, we're going to get to some more questions, including the one about the path to homeownership, how you start to even think about buying a house, what that looks like. We'll get to that and more questions right after the break.
All right, Joel, we're back from the break. You still hanging in there?
Well, I'm here, buddy. I'm ready.
All right, before we get to that question about home ownership, let's get to a question about how to go about paying off a loan.
Hey, Matt and Joel. This is Cassie from Liberty, Missouri. I love your show. I love that you drink beer. Makes my day. Anyway, we have an installment loan that we got a couple years ago for some siding and windows on a property. It's 6.99% with a maturity date of 2029. This is the only debt we have besides our home. We want to get this paid off as soon as possible. I don't want to pay this interest rate forever. What are my options? We want to pay it off very quickly, especially with the economy like it is and the interest rates being low. But we're just looking for options. I don't really know what to do with it. Any advice or help would be much appreciated. Thank you.
Cassie, thanks for your question. By the way, drinking a good beer makes our days too, doesn't it, Matt?
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that she enjoys us enjoying a beer.
That makes me happy. All right, Cassie, let's get on to your question about paying off an installment loan. And we so love your motivation to pay off that debt quickly. 7% is an expensive interest rate, especially in today's environment. And you definitely don't want to be paying on that loan for the next 9 years. But you also don't want to pay off that installment loan by any means necessary, right? There are certain things you need to take into consideration before you aim all of your money arsenal at this debt. And in particular, given the trying times we find ourselves in, you don't want to wipe out all of your emergency fund that you have saved up. You want to be able to maintain at least some financial margin right now, even while you're making paying off this debt a big priority in your life.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want to completely wipe out all of your cash reserves to just pay down this installment loan. And Cassie, let's mention credit cards as well. You know, since this installment loan was used for home improvement, it sounds like you might have a larger balance. And so you may not be able to do a balance transfer and pay off that installment loan with a 0% balance transfer credit card. And even if you could, you probably wouldn't want to, because if you were to do that, the clock would then be ticking on that credit card and you might only have 15 months or maybe at most 21 months to pay off that card. And you don't want to put yourself in a position where you're going to see the interest rate really go sky high after that 0% window has expired.
Yeah. So ultimately for Cassie, Matt, you and I think that a HELOC is ideal for her. Rates on those are roughly half of what Cassie's currently paying. And there are typically no closing costs associated with getting a HELOC. Rates are so low, they're very competitive. And so, yeah, that's the direction that Cassie, we would suggest you go in order to make sure more of your money, more of your payments are going towards eliminating the debt, not just going towards interest. One other thing that makes the HELOC even a better idea right now is that the Federal Reserve has indicated that they're going to keep rates low for a while, in all likelihood through 2022. A home equity line of credit does not come with a fixed rate. And that is one downside of a HELOC, right? That your rate can increase over the life of the loan. But because of the likelihood that rates are not going to go up in the next few years, that makes the HELOC a whole lot less risky. So while current borrowers have seen their rates decline, which is awesome if you currently have a HELOC, if you take out a loan right now, you will likely see your rate rise at some point during the payoff period. But with how low rates are currently, with how low we expect them to be over the next few years, I think it's not a terribly risky position to put yourself in. You're going to be able to pay off so much in the next 3 or 4 years that by the time rates do potentially start to rise, I think your balance is just going to be so much lower that a HELOC still makes the most sense.
Yeah, it is a perfect time to get a HELOC. That is, if you can secure one. One other thing to keep in mind is that a lot of the bigger banks aren't currently offering HELOCs. But that's actually fine, because we'd want you to look around to some local small banks or local credit unions where many are still offering HELOCs. So, you know, in the end, a HELOC will likely be the best option for you, because you're going to be drastically cutting your rate now, making it easier to pay down the loan more quickly. So Cassie, do some shopping locally for a HELOC and yeah, see what kind of rate you can get.
No doubt. All right. And HELOCs, Matt, are associated with home ownership. And that is what our next question is about.
Hey, Matt and Joel. I hope you guys are doing well. My name is John. I'm from Los Angeles, California. I just want to start off by saying how much of a fan I am. I listen to every episode and I even write down notes in a journal. Because of your advice, I was able to pay off all of my credit card debt and school loan and even start an HSA, a Roth, and a high interest savings account. I have a quick question for you guys about home ownership. My next financial goal is to be able to own a house, but given the renting culture and high rent costs in California, I'm not really sure how to start or even where to look. For context, I previously lived in San Francisco, where renting an apartment, usually at a high cost, seems to be the norm, so the idea of actually owning a house seems a little foreign to me. Any guidance on starting a path towards home ownership would be amazing. Thanks, guys.
Joel, I don't know if you heard that question, but John is getting after it. Man, that is amazing. Paying down all those debts, including student loans. And he started investing in an HSA and a Roth. That's amazing.
Yeah, and he's taking notes during the podcast. That's super impressive.
I love that.
Maybe our show notes should be a little more detailed, John, so you don't have to do that. I don't know. But let's talk about John's question and the path to home ownership. John, first, you need to decide if that's the path you actually want to be on. When you start looking at numbers, home ownership is definitely not a slam dunk for everyone. There are a lot of additional expenses that hopeful homeowners overlook. It's so easy to get starry eyes when you're looking at homes on Redfin or Zillow.com and to imagine yourself living in this new place. And crunching the numbers can fall by the wayside because we fall in love with the idea of owning our own place. And John, in particular, because you live in an expensive city, that means it's even less likely to make sense for you to buy a home. And in particular, in expensive cities, primary residence can often be terrible investments. And Matt, we've talked overall about how home ownership, buying a home, is not necessarily a good financial move. And in many cases, it's a terrible financial move. We talked about that in detail, John, on episode 30, if you want to check that one out. So if you're just crunching the numbers, renting might continue to make the most sense, although it doesn't necessarily mean that you shouldn't buy a home. It just means that it might not make the most financial sense for you.
Yeah, and another thing to consider too is that homeownership, it's about more than just the dollars. It's more than just about the money, right? There's a sense of place and permanence that you can get from owning a home and feeling rooted to a spot. But it's a good thing to think through whether or not this is something that is really important to you. You know, maybe a good question to ask yourself is, you know, have I even enjoyed being at home during, you know, sheltering in place? If house projects and gardening, if that sounds like fun to you, then buying a home sounds like it could be a good fit. But if you've been itching to get back to traveling and, you know, maybe seeing friends in other cities, then maybe owning your own home, owning your own house, maybe that's not going to be a good idea for you.
Yeah, and in a place like San Francisco, you might not even have access to any sort of place to grow a garden. I don't know. I don't know. But yeah,
it's called square foot gardening. You go vertical.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. John, another lifestyle consideration is knowing and even committing to being able to live in that house for a certain amount of time. 5 years is often recommended, but we like to err on the side of caution and say that if you're going to buy a house, you should really plan to live there for at least 7 years. That's because of the massive transaction costs associated with buying or selling a home. The great thing is, if you're buying a home right now, you can lock in a fixed rate for a long period of time that is incredibly low, making it potentially a better decision to buy right now.
Yeah, rates are close to 10-year lows right now.
Yeah, which could lower your monthly costs, right, on your mortgage, which helps put a positive check mark in that column of wanting to buy a home. But don't forget that if you decide to sell your home within just a few years, even if home prices haven't gone down because of just those transaction costs of real estate agents and closing costs, you could be taking a loss on that home. And so, yeah, you're going to want to be able to commit to staying in that place for at least 7 years.
Yeah, 6% alone just in realtor fees can be a lot of money when it comes time to sell.
Yeah, for sure.
So, John, let's assume, though, that you've thought through all these things, you do want to buy a home, and you're ready to maybe pull the trigger. It is important to save up a healthy down payment. 20% is ideal to qualify for the best rates out there and to avoid PMI. Also, you want to make sure that your credit score is in great shape, too, in order to get the best rates. And you can also ensure that you get the best rate by shopping around with a minimum of 3 lenders. But you know what? We would even prefer more than that if you can kind of nerd out a little bit and shop it by maybe 2 more lenders and have a total of 5. You just want to make sure that you are really getting the best rate. And you do that by comparing. And so once you have financing squared away, the next thing you want to do is to get some recommendations on a great realtor who has a lot of experience helping buyers and sellers in the specific location that you hope to buy a home in. You want to tour a lot of homes, get an inspection. There's a lot of details involved with the actual home buying process. But again, a great realtor will help you tremendously and will help you to, you know, walk through that entire process.
Yeah, Matt, you said tour a lot of homes. I think that's really crucial. I think anybody shopping in particular for their first home should step foot in at least 10 homes. And honestly, probably more like 20, because there are so many idiosyncrasies to houses. Every neighborhood is different. Every home is different. So the more that you can walk around houses and see what's different, what's unique, the more that can help you become an informed buyer. And that part of the equation actually typically gets people excited. Cool, I want to go look at 10 or 20 homes. But the thing that doesn't typically excite people is shopping their rate with different lenders and getting different quotes and comparing them apples to apples. But that is something that you and I are proponents of. It might be a little nerdy, not quite as fun as going and touring a bunch of homes, but it's something that's super necessary if you want to lower those monthly costs of owning that home.
That's right, man. All right, we've got a couple more questions we're going to get to after the break, including that one about bikes as well as selling some company stock. And we'll get to those in a minute.
All right, Matt, we're back from the break. And the next question up is one about selling company stock that's appreciated nicely.
Hi, Joel and Matt. This is Megan from sunny San Diego, California. Currently, my company's stock is at an all-time high, and if I sell both my long-term and some of my short-term stock, I could pay off all of my high-interest credit card debt. I'm wondering if I should sell just enough to cover my debt, only sell my long-term stock to avoid the short-term capital gains tax, or let it continue to rise. I do have savings and a 401k. Well, thank you so much for taking my question. Cheers.
Joel, first of all, I feel like Megan's maybe rubbing it in a little bit. She lives in sunny San Diego.
We get it, Megan. You live in a great town with great craft beer, and it's always great weather. We understand.
That's right. What's your favorite brewery there in San Diego? Modern Times is there.
Modern Times is excellent. I've been to Alesmith. That's an excellent spot as well. But like, there's too many to count. Like, it's really just too hard to name a favorite brewery in California or San Diego in particular.
It's a good place to live for sure. I've heard this one there called Pure Project that's supposed to be really good as well.
Oh,
I don't think they distribute though, so we'll see. And I'm also a little curious, too, what company Megan works for, because she said that her company stock is doing really well during these difficult, kind of weird times. And so, like, I know she doesn't work for JCPenney. You
know? Probably not one of the airlines either.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But I think let's get to the heart of Megan's question. And man, I think like our first response when we heard Megan's question was, heck yes, you should sell, right? If your company stock has risen this much and you have high interest credit card debt at the same time, you should sell it and pay that credit card debt off. And in Megan's question, she said, or should I continue to let it rise? And if any of us could predict the future and know that this stock was going to continue to rise, well, then I think we might have a different take, right? But none of us knows the future of Megan's company, its particular stock. We don't have any insight as to what the stock market's going to do tomorrow or a year from now. But what we do know is that credit card debt will eat you alive with interest rates that never stop in the 18, 19, 20, 22% range. So I think it's a fairly easy decision in our minds, right? To sell all the stock, pay off your debt, be done with credit card debts, and then, Megan, do your best not to run up those credit cards anymore, not to do any spending on them that you can't pay off at the end of the month.
Yeah, Joel, I totally agree. You know, Megan, even though it's worked out for you up until now, like, we're not huge fans of having really any company stock in your portfolio. Like, I personally would have none. There's just too much risk having both your paycheck and your investments with one single company. So you'd be lowering your risk in multiple ways by selling the stock and getting rid of your credit card debt. You know, if your company is offering, you know, an ESPP, employee stock purchase plan, go ahead and do get those shares at a discount, but then sell them as soon as possible. Otherwise, we would recommend that you just stick with widely diversified, low-cost index funds. And you can get those with our favorites, Fidelity and Vanguard.
Yeah, so I think basically Megan's going to get the best of both worlds, where she scored really big with her company stock and had this just incredible ability to be able to get rid of her credit card debt in one fell swoop. And when she sells her stock in order to pay off that credit card debt, she's doing something else that's great. She won't have nearly as much riding on her employer, right? Her paycheck, and then also a good bit of her investments. So Matt, I totally agree. I think selling it, getting rid of the debt, it's really helpful for Megan's finances in multiple ways.
Nice. All right, Joel. So you and I, we love bikes. Our next question has to do with biking with your kid. So let's go ahead and hear that one.
Hey, Joel and Matt. This is Alex from Los Angeles. I love listening to your podcast. Thanks so much for all the information you provide me and all your listeners. You guys do a great job. I actually have a question that deals with your passion for bikes and cycling. I recently sold my old but still in great shape road bike. I decided to sell it because I hadn't been on it in a while, but the main reason I sold it was to try to make some money in order to purchase a new bike to take my 16-month-old daughter on rides with me using a rear-mounted child seat. I'm very much a novice when it comes to bikes and everything that goes into the things I should look for in a bike, but I definitely know that a road bike is not the best option for adding a child seat. I consider myself a tall guy, 6'2", and adding a child seat and the baby's weight, I know won't fly with a road bike. I did some research and I read that I should go with the hybrid bike because I don't want a mountain bike and I know I don't want a cruiser. But I found that even within the hybrid category, there's so many different types. Anyways, you guys know a lot more about bikes and I welcome your thoughts and opinions. Oh, and one last thing. Just like you guys, I would like to keep this purchase on a budget. $500 or below would be best, but if the best bang for your buck bike is out there a little higher than that, then I'd have to weigh the pros and cons of the price and the actual bike. Thanks, and keep up the great work.
Alex, great question. Matt and I, we always love talking about bikes, yeah. So you don't have to twist our arm to take your question on the show.
And he's a tall guy like you. Did you hear that?
He's
6'2". He doesn't have your 6'4 going on, but he's still pretty tall.
6'5", buddy. 6'5".
Wait, you're 6'5"?
Yeah.
Dang, dude. I'm like barely 6 foot.
It can make it harder to find a bike for taller people.
Yeah, seriously.
That's for sure.
You've had issues with bike stems specifically, I know.
Yeah, I literally had to buy an aftermarket one for my rad bike because, yeah, what it came with was meant for people up to 6'2".
Yeah, normal people.
Right. So I had to go on eBay and find one of my own. But yeah, that being said too, bike sales have been through the roof lately. I saw that REI said that new bike sales are up 4 times. The amount they normally are lately. So people are super into biking and largely because of the pandemic and there's nothing else to do. And Matt, we mentioned too how in this past spring, it's been even tougher to find a used bike. So if something does randomly get posted on Craigslist or Facebook, it gets snatched up super quick because a lot of traditional bike shops and websites are completely sold out or they're just running thin on stock. So Alex, we're going to do our best to give you some great advice on how to find a great bike, but also know it just might be a little bit tougher right now in order to get that exact bike you want.
Yeah, a lot of companies are still selling bikes, but they're backordered as well. So Alex, there are a lot of different definitions out there, but I would recommend either a hybrid or a gravel bike. And it sounds like you kind of came upon a hybrid bike on your own. A hybrid will be a little more suited for on-road riding and will likely put you in a more upright riding position. And so this means it'll be a little more comfortable and casual. And because of that, though, don't expect to go, you know, as fast. You're not going to be in as aggressive of a position. But if you are looking for maybe more of a do-everything kind of bike, check out gravel or adventure bikes. That's actually what I just picked up from REI, which is funny that you mentioned REI, Joel. But I picked up a gravel bike. They are tougher than road bikes, but they have tire clearances that allow for, you know, some fatter, knobbier tires. So you can also easily ride fast on dirt and gravel. But then you can take it easy when you put the kid seat back on. And so I'm not saying that you're going to be riding super fast on dirt or gravel with your kid on board, but with a lot of those kid seats, you're able to kind of pop them on and off pretty easily. And so if you did go with one of these gravel bikes, I personally like that because it kind of opens up a lot more riding options for you. And then you're not only confined to the pavement.
Yeah, man, I think you're right. I think either one of those kinds of bikes with a kid seat on it is great for hauling around one kid. I think, too, for Alex, one thing worth considering is if there's a chance that you're going to have more children at some point, you're going to have more kiddos riding on your bike, a cargo bike could still be a great move. And Alex mentioned this in his question. In a particular brand that you've had for a long time that I think makes great, pretty inexpensive cargo bikes, although they're still above the $500 threshold that Alex was hoping to stay under, is Yuba Bikes. And they have a newer bike called the Combi that is $1,000, but you could put 2, maybe even 3 kids on the back of there, and it'd be a solid bike for a lot of years. So much of it depends on kind of what you want to do, whether you're going to be riding only with your kids on back, or whether you're going to be riding solo too, whether you want to be able to remove the kid seat and then ride on your own, or you're only doing kind of family rides. But yeah, Yuba's worth checking out. They make some great bikes.
Yeah, and Joel, you and I, we live on the East Coast here in Atlanta, but Yuba, they're actually headquartered somewhere out there on the West Coast. I'm pretty sure in California, maybe even close to where Alex lives. So Alex, you could maybe even check them out in person, which would be a lot of fun. And something else too, Alex, I wanted to mention, if you are going to consider a traditional bike and you're going to go with the bike seat, I would recommend checking out some of those bike seats that mount not on the rear of the bike, but instead on the front, where it's mounted in between the handlebars and your seat. I personally really like these seats because, first of all, your arms are kind of wrapped around the kid while you're riding, and so it kind of, I don't know, it encloses them a little bit. I think they feel a little safer because they're inside your arm cage a little bit there. But you can also talk to them while you're riding, which, man, I found that to be so awesome because you're basically talking them through what you're doing, And then plus, too, they're not just staring at your butt the whole time the whole time you're riding.
Man, I have pictures of my kids on the back of my bike, and I swear my butt's right in their face. I feel bad for them, but we still have a blast riding around.
But Thule, they are a company that makes one of those, and it's called the Thule Yep Mini, and we'll put a link to that in our show notes as well. But that's a really solid company, and they make a really good one that's really secure. And Alex, for an actual bike, right, a non-cargo bike, my favorite discount buying site is bikesdirect.com. On there, you can definitely find a solid hybrid or solid gravel bike for $500 or less for sure. I've had numerous friends purchase bikes from on there. I've purchased a bike from them before. I currently have a friend who actually has ordered one from them, and it's, again, not surprisingly, it's on back order. But they are a solid online seller of bicycles, even though their website may not look totally legit.
Oh my gosh, they could totally use a little revamp, couldn't they?
But you're buying essentially straight from the manufacturer, no middleman. It's why their bikes are easily 60% less than what you would pay for an equivalent bike from a major retailer or straight from a company that maybe you're more familiar with. But those bikes on that site are solid.
All right, Matt, that makes me want to get out of here and go start riding my bike.
I know, doesn't it?
But best of luck to Alex finding something great and making some memories on the bike. I mean, that's one of the best things about having a bike and riding with your kids is the memories you make, the places you go, where hopping in a car to go to that same place just doesn't quite do it.
It's not the same experience. I mean, for me, again, literally having that bike seat where Evie, our oldest, was sitting up front there, like, I have such great memories of riding around the city with her between my arms, you know, telling her where we're going, what we're doing. You know, pointing things out, like, look at that doggy, you know, things like that. And that's not the kind of experience you have riding around in a car, or even, you know, if a kid's in a trailer. Like, trailers are pretty safe, and they're a great way to haul kids around as well, but they're in their own little vehicle behind you that you're towing, and you can't interact with them. I'm a big fan of those seats right there between your arms.
Yeah, for sure, man. All right, let's get back to the beer that we had on the show today. We drank Wild Leap Time, Love, and Tenderness, double IPA. And I feel like there should be some slow jams playing behind us while we recap the beer that we had on the show. Matt, what were your thoughts on this one?
Well, first of all, I wanted to mention Wild Leap. This they are no stranger to the show. We definitely have had their beers on before, and they just continue to make solid, delicious IPAs that are kind of the new IPA, that are a little hazy. This one in particular was lush. I feel like that's the best way to I could describe it. But it was juicy. It was full-bodied. And fruity at the same time, with just like a little bit of that hop kick to it, kind of that hop dryness going on, but mixed in with all the florals and all that fruitiness. This was a really delicious one. And again, I feel like we should branch out a little bit and try different beers.
We should.
Because we constantly drink IPAs, but it's because we love them so much. They're so delicious.
Yeah, this one was soft, sweet, fruit forward.
Yeah.
Maybe like a juicy fruit gum or something like that. But I really dug this one. Wild Leap, man. They've been making some good beers. They're about an hour south, 45 minutes south of where we are.
Yeah, I've never been there.
But. Me neither. But you know, one of these days we'll take a bike road trip down there.
Ooh, let's do it.
Can our legs handle it?
Oh, no, we can't bike down there, oh, but okay. We can like drive down there with our bikes and, you know, find a trail or something like that.
Yeah.
Find a gravel road to ride around on our adventure bikes.
That sounds good. All right. Well, Matt, that's going to do it for this episode.
Yeah.
And for folks that want to read the show notes for this episode, well, just go to our website, howtomoney.com. You'll find them there.
And we would also be incredibly thankful if you not only subscribe to the show, but left us a solid review. It is always helpful. And a big thanks in advance. So, Joel, that's going to be it, buddy. Until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.